get a temporary permit, we'll strip the place, and we'll have our money in the bank before they can file on us. And then you two geniuses can just bury them in paperwork until hell is a ski resort.
Ollie, come here.
Never mind. Come on, let's go.
Now it's garbage.
Just another movie night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night, and I'm Scott.
I'm Joe.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, baby.
Guess what we're doing today?
Talking trash.
Talking trash, indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, the much debated, often forgotten flicks on the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we truly believe you can't review films unless you know what the worst is.
I feel like you forgot a line.
Did I?
Yeah, you forgot to say much debated.
The lowest rated, the much debated.
Fun fact, you're wrong.
I thought I did.
But I feel like in this movie, no one's debating this. So there's no debating.
I might.
Actually, you know what? I might also. I might. And I have a lot to say about this movie.
All right. So, look, we're calling back because I think 2 years ago. Is it 2 years now? It's been a long time. We've been doing this random thing that some people listen to. We listen.
We like it.
If someone said online, you guys seem to like yourselves. Hey, I like you, Joe. Did you know that?
I guess you're referring to those people on YouTube.
I'm just joking around.
Oh, hey, okay. They're mean. Anyway.
I was going to say that I think a couple, I don't know, was it, I guess it was two Christmases ago, we did a random movie that had a Christmas element in it, but really wasn't a Christmas movie, but it was a Chuck Norris film.
Yes.
And while we watched that film, we said, is this how Chuck Norris movies all are? And so we kind of said, we got to return and do maybe a month of just Chuck Norris films. And we put it off for a long time. And we're finally back. And I'm like, no, I'm going back to what we said. We're going to watch Chuck Norris. You know, a whole month of Chuck Norris films because we're celebrating his birthday.
Are we?
Yeah, this is his birthday month.
Oh, wow. Okay. And how old are we, Chuck Norris?
How old indeed?
He's got to be 87?
That's a great question. If I was actually smart and had my facts ready, I would know this. He was born in 1940, Joe.
He's 85.
Yeah, so we're celebrating his 85th birthday or his 86th?
It'll be his 85th birthday.
Okay. So he is turning 85, and so we're celebrating in the only way we know how. Just scraping the barrel. Sorry, Chuck. But we're looking into your filmography here, and I picked four doozies. Okay. Today, we are talking about a movie that's tagline is, it'll take more than a miracle to save Mount Tanglewood. It'll take him.
Mount Tanglewood.
We are talking about 1996's Forest Warrior. It was directed by Chuck Norris's younger brother, Aaron Norris.
I knew it.
Who directed the Chuck Norris films. Are you ready?
Yes.
Mission in Action 3, Delta Force 2, The Hitman, Sidekicks, Hellbound, Top Dog, Walker, Texas Ranger Trial by Fire, and four episodes of the Walker, Texas Ranger, the TV show.
Wow.
It was written by Ron Swanson. Not that Ron Swanson.
What's your question?
My question is, what the hell?
Like, how do they know who you are?
Yeah.
Okay. There are these things called cookies, where, like, if you go to a site and buy something, it'll remember you and then create ads for other stuff you might want to buy.
So it learns information about me? Seems like an invasion of privacy.
Dude, if you think that's bad, go to Google Earth and type in your address.
Okay. He was the writer of Top Dog, and it was also co-written, or I guess the screenplay is written by Galen Thompson, who is the writer of horror films The Evil and Superstition, as well as Chuck Norris films The Hitman, Sidekicks, Walker, Texas Ranger 3, Deadly Reunion.
Deadly Reunion.
I love this. Is like a family film. This is just a bunch of people who know each other.
You're just making this up,
right? I'm not. I wish I was. This film has a 3.6 on IMDb from 3,000 reviewers.
All right.
And guess what? It stars Chuck Norris.
Does it, though?
Kind of.
He takes a back seat in his own movie.
I gotta say this. This is weird because you said you didn't recognize any of the names, and that's given because this movie stars a bunch of character actors. Every one of these guys in this movie I know from a ton of crap, but is one of those people that I'm not sure of their names.
Yeah,
you know, they're always in the background.
Well, we know Terry Kaiser.
Okay, yeah. So this co-star is Terry Kaiser. I love Terry Kaiser.
You guys know him as Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, he's playing Travis Thorne in this. Yeah, he's in besides the Weekend at Bernie films, he's in the masterpieces, Joe. The masterpieces, Mannequin 2 and Tammy the T-Rex, Joe.
Yes. He's also in Friday the 13th, The New Blood. He gets some stuff.
This also co-stars, like I said, with the character actors. Max Gill, he plays Sheriff Ramsey in this film. He's from Barney Miller in the Dirty Harry franchise. Roscoe Lee Brown is in this as Clovis Madison. He was in Logan's Run, and he's a giant, massive voiceover actor who's done everything that we love. Also, William Sanderson, who I absolutely love. He's in, like, everything I like. He was on Deadwood, Lost. He's in Fletch, Blade Runner, and he was Larry on the Bob Newhart Show.
Oh, boy. Hi. I'm Larry. This is my brother, Daryl. That's my other brother, Daryl.
So, how you doing?
Okay, except I throwed my back out last week crawling under a house.
Sounds like a tough job.
Wasn't a job. I just like crawling under houses.
Is he the one that delivered the bad lines?
No, he was the bumbling, funny lawyer guys. They had two funny, bumbling lawyers for Terry Kaiser.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, you know, Larry, the famous characters on Bob Newhart Show. Remember? They would always come in and fix everything. There's like three brothers.
No.
Really?
I never watched Newhart.
He's so many damn shows. And he's been on everything we love. He was a main character on Deadwood.
Oh. I should know that then.
It also has Michael Beck. He plays the drunk father in this film.
Michael Beck. He's the one that can't act for shit.
Yeah, he's the lead actor in The Warriors and Xanadu.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, didn't pick up on that, did you?
No.
Yeah.
How did I not pick up on that? Wow.
Also, playing Terry Kaiser's like right-hand man, bad guy kind of guy is John Dennis Johnston. He was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Twilight Zone the movie, Pale Rider, 48 Hours. Like, I know all these guys. Like, it's crazy, wow. This movie.
I'm still stuck on the Michael Beck thing because, I mean, in The Warriors, he just had to be, like, a brooding tough guy.
Yeah.
So he didn't really have to do much acting.
It's an ensemble cast, too.
It's an ensemble cast, but this one...
He is the lead in Xanadu, which you, for some reason, really liked.
But did I, though?
I know.
Xanadu is like a bad movie, all-star movie. It's because we love, you know, Cutie Pie, Olivia Newton-John.
It's all about Olivia Newton-John for me. That's the only reason I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't, but that song is great. And also, in the background in this movie, very odd, I was expecting him to be a main character, is Buck Flowers. Of course, to us is like a bad movie all-star, like in everything. Every John Carpenter film.
He always plays a drunk.
He's in Back to the Future franchise. He just is in one shot, and then the last shot of the movie, he's on a swing.
Well, that's fitting.
It's so weird.
He's the guy that you hire in Hollywood when you need a drunk man.
That's not true, though. He's always playing characters like sheriffs or deputies. He's always the bad guy.
He's usually the drunk, the henchman. Though.
Yeah, Elliot Baskin. He's a truck driver in this film. All of a sudden, he is in the Spider-Man 2 and 3. He's the landlord. He's in Air Force One, Heroes, Moscow on the Hudson, being there. He's another guy that I've seen in a lot of films. There's a lot of these guys that show up in this film for absolutely no reason, with no real lines of dialogue or character whatsoever, which is very odd. This movie is a very strange bunch. I'm just wondering if everybody was on location and they were like, yeah, come on over.
We're all friends.
We're going to hang out and just make a cabin in the woods for no reason.
They knew that Chuck Norris was in it.
I can't imagine Chuck Norris being the guy that's like, yeah, everybody's pretty good friends with Chuck Norris.
No, but you know Chuck Norris is in a movie and you're just like, yeah.
Is that what happens?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Let's be in the Chuck Norris film. So here we are. We're in a Chuck Norris film. And I got to tell you, when I found this, when I searched it and I looked up his list of movies and I saw a movie where he is a spirit that transforms into animals. And I said, yes, that's the one I'm going to watch because that needs to be seen.
And how do you feel about that now?
Not so bad.
I gotta tell you, me neither.
Yeah, Joe, come on. Do you feel the spirit? Bring on the spirit of the bear, the skunk, the raccoon.
The falcon.
The falcon. That random titmouse. The trees. The river. All of the sound effects, all of the stock footage that we could find of animals in the woods. Bring them all together.
This movie was an hour and 33 minutes of just gloriousness. I could not take my eyes off the screen. I have to say, I did not hate this movie.
You were very brave. You saved his life.
Do you think it would be all right if I can take him home just for a little while?
He wouldn't be happy off the mountain. His home is here in the forest.
Can I be his friend?
You are his friend.
We're burying the lead. We're just going right for it.
I'm just saying, I just want to put this out there. This is talking trash. So, I guess I do have some trash to talk. But...
Well, let's get to it. And then you want to get to the review at the end?
Yeah. Let's get to the review at the end.
Well, I think we quickly figure out while we're watching this movie is that it is a kid's film. Not really a full-on action movie, which you would associate Chuck Norris with. But I think at the time, he was doing movies like this and Sidekicks, which were really kind of kid films. Well,
the 90s.
With Chuck Norris being a side character.
Yeah, yes. And also, this has like every bit of the 90s feel. Like every bit. I mean, the haircuts, just all of it. All of the 90s feel. But you know what? I think I disagree with you about the quickly realizing it's a kid's film. I did not realize it was a kid's film too soon into the movie. I didn't realize that.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, okay, I think this is going to be a bad movie that they're taking too seriously.
Okay.
And then I saw, you know, and then I saw the kids and I was like, oh, okay. I have a feeling what's going to happen here.
That's what I was saying. Like, it starts off with kids being told a story around the campfire randomly. And that story is being shown in flashbacks, but like it keeps coming back to the flashback and cutting to the kids' reactions hearing the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, huh, I wonder how this is all going to tie together. And then I'm thinking, oh, it's a kids' movie, I think. I think we're going to be following these kids are our main characters. And I think I turned out to be right. So these kids are being told a story about the spirit of the forest, right? McKenna? Jebediah McKenna? Am I correct in this?
Wait, I think you're right. I think he is.
Jebediah McKenna.
No, it's a Jedediah. Jedediah.
Oh, Jedediah instead of Jebediah.
No, wait, hold on. Jebediah McKenna. You were right the first time. Good job.
Look, anytime you need to have a flashback person who started your town, you're going to go Jebediah.
Hey, everybody, an old man's talking.
Grandpa's the name. Did you know this tree dates back to frontier times? Oh, shut up. It all began when Jebediah Springfield first came to these lands.
True.
Even Springfield did.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I feel like they make us try to believe that Chuck Norris is Native American.
Oh, this is, yeah. There's nothing like saying the savior of your mountain. Your the Indian heritage was saved by some white dude.
Okay.
Nothing says that clearly like Chuck Norris doing
he's
it.
He's clearly a ginger.
What a, yeah, what a weird thing. I guess it's one of those, it's really funny. He married in to the civilization of the mountain or whatever.
Okay.
And then he was left the mountain to protect it with his wife.
Okay. So that is the story that this old man at the campfire is telling the kids, that he doesn't put it into anyone's head that Chuck Norris is supposed to be a Native American.
No,
he's a frontiersman. That's what they call him, a frontiersman. But like, he married a Native American
woman.
That's
what I'm saying. And he was left it.
And he was left to take care. His spirit was...
Well, they said before his spirit thing, they said that it was handed to him with his wife. So does that mean he had people that he was also protecting?
I'm going to say yes.
I think so,
because
too.
Because this movie opens with, like, it seems like people... Bad men are trying to take his land and salvage it for themselves, meaning take the trees and build their own land.
Yeah,
there.
Think Last of the Mohicans with Chuck Norris.
So he kicks their ass. But then, you know, there's a lot of kicks flying. There's a lot of, you know, swirly punches and stuff.
It's a lot of staple Chuck Norris fighting, which means kick real quick, jab real quick, step to the side.
Yes.
That's how all of his fight scenes seem to look.
That's exactly right. And so he did a bunch of those little twirly punches and elbows to the face and things like that. But then, you know, he's doing well. He's taking out the guys one by one, but then he gets shot.
Yes.
So we see frontiersman Norris kind of gliding down the mountain, dying.
Well, can I ask you a question? The guy shoots him. He's watching the whole fight happen, right? The guy mm-hmm. shoots him. Is he also played by the actor who later on is a part of the bad guys?
I think so.
I felt like
I feel like they're trying to say that he's an ancestor. You know how they always look the same?
Then you think that would have been more interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but I think they move that to the wayside because they just didn't give a shit. But he gets shot, and we see Chuck Norris like laying on the riverbed.
Well, he apparently falls into the river, and the kids are being told that he virtually drowned.
Right, because he's shot. He was shot like twice.
Yeah.
But he washes up on the riverbed, and a bear comes along and finds his corpse just laying in the water and pulls him out of the water
by his
arm.
No, this is so funny. First off, it looks like he's biting on his arm a little bit.
It does.
But then the next shot is clearly somebody dragging Chuck Norris mm-hmm. off camera, and the bear a little too far off camera, pretending that he's somehow carrying it, but you could see that the distance between the arm and the bear would be too far. So you know someone else is dragging him, which is really funny to look at.
It's quite hysterical, but this is my favorite thing, because the bear literally has some sort of a spiritual bond with Chuck Norris's corpse.
And it feels his pain, Joe.
And he feels his pain, and so he summons many, many, many different animals to congregate and put their spirits inside of Chuck Norris. Now, I'm not going to lie. When I saw this, I thought that Chuck Norris was going to come back to life, and they were going to heal him and whatever, whatever. Is that what happened?
Okay, so this is confusing.
Because a long time ago.
I would also assume, yeah, this is supposed to be ancient history to the land that they're on. I would assume that the bear was also another one of these spirit people. I assume, because it happens later on again, and I'm very confused about that part. But we see that they're saying that Chuck Norris is straight up just dead. He died, and that when they dragged him out, they took his soul and they made him a part of the forest as its protector.
Yes.
I don't know if this is like a Black Panther scenario where the last Forest Warrior passed on to the new Forest Warrior, and like they went off to the dying lands of the kings.
I mean, you know? I'm guessing so, because the forest is so beautiful and lush, and it's never been tampered with since, you know, Chuck Norris took over.
Which also is very questionable. And I guess we can talk about that as we keep getting on with this, because there's no way in hell, since the time of Chuck Norris becoming the Forest Warrior in spirit to present day, 96,
mm-hmm.
nothing has happened.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's very sus. So it's also very confusing, because the people who killed Chuck Norris's character, Jebediah, the people who shot him had to have done it for a reason to take his land.
Right.
And so I don't know if after that there's like a movie that didn't happen between this movie and that moment that is him becoming full like vengeance and just killing off the people who are trying to steal his land.
Hmm.
I feel like there's a better movie in here that they could have made, the prequel to Forest Warrior. Okay. Jebediah's Revenge.
Jebediah's Forest Warrior Revenge. 2.
Yeah. Because I would think that his wife was left. And the girl who, one of the kids is a young girl. And that's the only, and by the way, she's the best of the kids.
Yeah, her name is Austine.
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
She is the one who's kind of worried about certain things, and she keeps talking about his wife. He's like, well, if this happened and they made him the Forest Warrior and he became the soul of the forest to protect it, what happened to his wife? Did he ever see her again?
My lawyers, my colleagues here will be glad to answer any questions that you may still have, and I want to thank all of you for coming. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
I think they'll come around.
It's lovely, lovely.
You two don't know what the hell you're talking about.
And the guy telling the story is like, no.
No, they never saw each other again.
Yeah, and watches, so, and she's like, that's so sad.
The
and,
kid is like, she's like really sad about it, and she can't get it out of her head through the whole movie.
So, yeah, and my question, though, is, why didn't he see her again? And how does that make any sense? Because if he's the protector of the forest, wouldn't they have tried to take their land from her and her people?
Mm-hmm.
And did he have a revenge movie where he killed off all of these people before they did it? Did she live a long life? Or was she also killed?
I mean, I'm just going to assume that if she wasn't killed by, like, the forest poachers, I guess, so to speak, then she probably died of old age, you know? Okay,
well, let's live with that. I like that idea. And I do like this idea that there was a Kill Bill spirit movie in the between here of him, like, Constantine or whoever comes back from the dead and to kill off all the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Spawn or somebody. Like, just like, I would love to see that movie.
Yeah.
Well, the kids are all... I guess they were being told this story. I don't really know what's going on, but none of the kids, only two of the kids, we only see one of their parents.
Yeah, so there are four boys and one girl.
Yeah.
And two of the boys we know are brothers.
Yep.
The other two, I don't know.
We don't see their parents.
We don't see, no.
And they, for some reason, were grouped together to hear a campfire story before moving on to a town meeting.
Yeah, well, this meeting is important because this sets up the tone for the whole entire film. So they're listening to the campfire story, and then the next scene is we meet Terry Kaiser, who is Travis Thorne.
Yeah, oh, could you believe the bad guy in this movie? The guy who's causing the problems for everybody is the Thorne in their side?
Oh, of course, it's always Thorne.
Yeah,
So it turns out that Travis Thorne is like he's a lumber guy. He wants to knock down the forest and use the land for his own selfish reasons. And he's giving a speech to the townsfolk to get them on his side, but they're like not really on his side at all. They're kind of arguing a little bit. Like, we don't want the forest to be torn down. Like, how could you do that to the trees? And
it's no one actually is making a stink. We kind of cut to characters and they're kind of mentioning things. It's really focused on the kids' reaction. Some of them are smiling, even though like Terry Kaiser is kind of telling them this will help the town in the long run. I want to make this profitable for everybody.
Right. So he kind of just wants to do that whole, like, because he's like a lumber magnet. Like, he wants to like tear down the forest so he can build, I don't know, a shopping center or some shit.
Who knows? They also suggest that he was raised in this town. That he is a kid of this town.
Yeah.
Where his family are, like, we don't know anything about it, how he got to be the person he is without already cutting down a lot of this land in the first place. Who knows?
Right. I mean, but where was he doing these things before he was in this town?
Yeah, because he moved from this town and started cutting somewhere else?
Yeah. I mean, it's like the whole town is supposed to be against, like, deforestation, but then, like, he's been doing this, Terry Kaiser. Like, that's what he does. So, like, why would you even entertain this in a town hall? Like, you should just automatically vote him out. Like, just don't even entertain him.
Yeah, they don't seem to vote. They just instead bring on the country music band. And everybody just starts playing, and the kids start talking. We see more of the kids reacting to the movie more than any of the adults.
Right.
What we learn is that there's a younger brother and an older brother. Everybody looks like they're in Hanson. And everybody dresses like they're in one of these old grunge bands.
They have those godforsaken 1990s hairdos with the part down the middle. Yep. They all look like Ryder Strong, right? Wasn't it Ryder Strong in Boy Meets World?
Okay. I was going to say Tim Allen's kids on Home Improvement.
Perfect. Yeah, no, the older kid.
Yeah.
In Home Improvement with that parted hair down the
baggy clothes.
The baggy clothes, the flannel.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
They're all like that. And we see that the two of them have a mother who has what we could not stop looking at as maybe a wig, because they're like these bangs that look like a helmet.
Oh my God, it's awful.
And that she's the only one there that seems related to the kids. But what we find out is that the girl of the group, her father stumbles in drunk. And she goes off and has that conversation from every after school movie you've ever seen, where the kid has that one drunk dad whose mother disappeared and now she takes care of her father.
Of course.
And that's played by the actor we were talking about from The Warriors and everything. And he is overdoing it in this movie.
To say overdoing it, that is the understatement of the freaking decade, because he's and we saw him in other movies, and when you pointed him out, I was like, oh my God, that is him. He's just going all in.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody was directing him. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, they just let him loose.
They
didn't do a second take or a different angle. They just let him loose and they followed him.
Like, he wasn't even playing drunk the correct way, you know?
It wasn't like it was drunk. It was more like he was tired.
Yeah.
And he seems a little bumbly, but it wasn't too comical or too, it wasn't in either direction too much.
Right.
But the girl actor is actually pretty good in this. She's likable.
Yeah.
So she kind of grounds everything that happens around her, even if it's stupid.
Yeah, she's cute as hell, this little girl.
Yeah.
She's adorable, and
they made the right choice focusing on her.
Absolutely. And so she has to be the adult in the situation and put her dad to bed when he's drunk, and you know, she's very resourceful, this kid. You know, she has to be, because she had to grow up fast. But she knows how to do it all. She knows how to fish, she knows how to gut the fish, she knows how to do all of it.
She talks to the animals.
She's, you know, brave kid. She plays with snakes. She doesn't even give a shit.
She doesn't care at all.
No. A likable kid. And I don't really like kids in movies a lot of the time, but yeah. She's a likable kid.
She's one of those 90s kids you just kind of like. There was a lot of these movies like that in this time period,
mm-hmm.
where these kids movies, even these like cheap ones that came on HBO after school, they all feel like this. They always had this one kid that you kind of, I like this kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
and this is that. That's the same thing that's going on here. But what's really funny is she carries or helps her father walk home to their like trailer park house or whatever it is. And he falls asleep on the couch. And then she goes to the window in American Tale Fievel style. Is that his name? Fievel?
Fievel.
Fievel?
Yeah, Fievel.
God, I got to watch that again. I haven't seen that since I was a kid. But he goes,
my brother used to call him Weevil.
I just remember his floppy clothes, and he sings that song. What she does, she goes to the window and prays up to the moon over the mountain, which, by the way, I don't know if this is real. It's in all the shots, and I kept going, wow, this is beautiful. Where is this? I think I saw where it was, but it was, it doesn't seem like it's in America.
It has to be.
I thought it was Canada, maybe.
I mean, with the band that was playing and the well, style of dress, that they got podunk, they're making it seem like it's some kind of like podunk mountain town, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's called Tanglewood, apparently, which I didn't know. I don't remember them saying it once.
They did. They said it a couple times, did actually. They? Yes, Tanglewood. They did. Tanglewood.
She basically prays up to the mountain. And I was hoping she was going to sing somewhere out there. and she says, I looked at you and I was like, oh my God, is it about to happen? Is she praying to the forest warrior?
She and 100% sure as
hell, is. Yeah. And he appears.
Because she feels it in her soul.
She does. And he appears because he can feel. Because what they tell us is not only can he transform into the forest creatures, but he can also dive into your soul and read your thoughts and see through your eyes.
Yeah.
I'm like, this guy is scary.
It's pretty serious.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
You know, so she's praying, you know, for good things to happen in her life. And the next scene we get is the five children. Now, I have a problem with this.
Yeah,
okay?
This is wild.
And I said it a couple times. This movie is basically surrounding these five kids going on an adventure into the forest alone with wild animals and just a sleeping bag on their backs. Oh, and don't forget Clovis. I think his name is Clovis.
He's the one telling the story.
Provides them with toilet paper.
Yeah.
Now, let me just say this. You have fishing poles, toilet paper, a sleeping bag. That's what you got, okay? These five children are going into the forest to sleep, to camp out, okay? Alone with no adult, no weapons.
Well,
nothing.
He goes through a list, and they're like, yep, 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 we got it all. We got the toothbrush, we got the toothpaste.
A toothbrush.
You know, change of clothes, we got everything we need. Oh, here's some toilet paper. You guys forgot that.
Yeah, not like a hunting knife or something to protect yourselves against the wilderness. Now, these kids are all of, what, 12? What parents are allowing, well, we know her father's a drunk asshole, but what parents are allowing their kids to go overnight into the forest where they could be exposed to elements, exposed to animals, who knows what?
And apparently the group of kids have done this before. It's just the first time that other young kids going.
I guess it's a tradition.
I think it's a tradition.
I mean, whatever, but there's no way I'm letting my 11, 12-year-old kid go out into the forest alone. First of all, she's the only girl, okay? These boys are all turds. I mean, they're all right, but I'm just saying, they're still boys. And I'm not letting my daughter go out there. Like, I don't know what parents would let this happen, but whatever, it happens.
Yeah, they go off on their bikes and they drive out there. I was also going to point out, I don't know if you noticed this as well, but when they had the town hall meeting, there are no other kids.
So I don't see one other child.
This is, I'm guessing, Clovis not only runs the goods store, the pit stop, the gas station,
post.
Whatever it is, the trading post. He also is their school teacher, maybe.
Okay.
Because he's also reading them tales around the fire at night.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole thing's bizarre. This whole setup is bizarre, but they go into the forest and they go fishing, and they're pretty resourceful, these little kids. I mean, it was shocking.
Well, when they get there, there's this weird moment where the little kid seems to be abandoned in the middle of the woods for no reason, and then stumbles on to an abandoned treehouse built structure. Full on with carvings in the trees and everything.
Oh my God, this thing was amazing. Like, this is not a treehouse. This was like something that you would see at, like, what do you call those extreme parks? You know, like those where you have to zip line and you have to climb and all that stuff. It was like one of those things. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Someone left this in the middle of the forest. It's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. Now, this is where my problems go with the forest warrior himself, because if he's protecting the forest, he doesn't really want anybody to mess with it.
Right.
How was this built? How is the town that they're in built?
Right.
Didn't they need lumber?
Mm-hmm.
So what, weren't they cutting down trees?
All of your questions are very valid, and none of them get answered.
No.
However.
Because I'm thinking too much.
Yeah, you're thinking way too much.
It's just the only people who are bad people is industrial people.
Yeah, well, see, to build homes for people to live in is one thing, but to knock the trees down and kill wildlife and all that stuff for your own financial gain is another thing. And that is what our forest warrior is trying to, you know, prevent from happening. So these children, we see them frolicking in the water, having a good time, going fishing. They actually find a little friend. He's a little bear cub. And that's, he was like inhabiting the little...
Yeah, the little treehouse.
Little treehouse. And scared the shit out of them. But he ended up being their friend. They started calling him Rags. Because he had like a little piece of fabric stuck on his head.
Yeah. Well, the girl names them her Rags. She wants to have him as a pet.
Yeah, he's a little bear cub.
Now, can we talk about its voice?
Yeah.
It doesn't speak, but it does have a voice actor. I had to look into it because I'm like, that.
What?
Oh my God, that's fully a guy doing those noises.
Okay, but what's the reasoning?
I don't know, but one of your favorite voiceover actors from Scooby-Doo does all those noises usually.
Frank?
But he's not him in this.
Oh.
Because it is awful. And I'm not going to blame the voiceover actor, who is very heavy in the voice acting world. He's done a lot of stuff. He even did like Akuma in the Street Fighter games. He is doing some crazy stuff like this. And it's like Tasmania, or I would say Lilo and Stitch. The problem, I don't know if it's him doing, that's the problem, or it's the audio of it is so high above everybody that it's extremely noticeable that it's a guy doing that on a microphone.
Yeah, it's kind of noticeable. It's definitely something.
When I heard it, I said, oh, that is a guy. And so I looked, I had to run right to the credits and see if anybody was credited as a sound effects for that. And it was there. And I'm like, oh my God, why would they do this? Why wouldn't they just record an actual bear noise?
Yeah, I don't get it.
This bear cub is on set. They just could have recorded him and, you know, messing around.
It's easy because they had like stock footage of other animals that they took from other movies.
Every shot has a stock animal looking at them in a tree. There's always the same shot of an animal in a tree or a hawk just looking at them.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
It's because they want us to believe that each individual animal is Chuck Norris, like, transformed. So that's why they keep showing us all these animals.
Yeah. Well, we get our first forest warrior appearance as a protector.
Yes.
So
it's wonderful.
The bear gets up to hanging around a tree and making a lot of loud noises. And
it sounds like Yoda.
a bunch of guys in the forest hear it and they go, they're going to cut a tree and they hear these weird noises. And I go, oh, it's a bear. And they kind of freak out. There's only two guys and their boss.
Ollie, grab your gun. We got a bear over here.
Did you say bear?
Bear!
And they realize, no, it's just a cub. Let's kill it.
Okay, first of all, these assholes work for Terry Kaiser, so they're there basically to destroy the forest and everything in it. And so automatically we know that they're just not good guys. When they see a tiny bear cub and they want to kill it, what kind of human beings are you? Like, I was just like, oh God, this is going to be a perfect opportunity to get freaking drop kicked.
Yeah. Well, they actually go with a sniper rifle, like a hunting rifle, to shoot it. And the little girl runs in front of it.
I was so upset by this scene because this asshole was literally pointing that gun at that little girl for at least 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, are you kidding me right now? She's a little girl. Don't point that gun at her.
Yeah.
So she's trying to save the bear cub from getting killed.
Which she does, but then they suggest that they're going to take a knife and cut and skin it instead.
Oh my God. It's so terrible, terrible. But then we see, is it a hawk?
Yes.
Okay, so the hawk, we see the hawk flying, and all of a sudden it swoops down into the face of one of the guys that's going to shoot the bear, and it ends up being Chuck Norris drop-kicking him, and from the sky, mind you.
Yes.
It was a flying
dropkick.
It was a flying dropkick. He transforms from bird into Chuck Norris, and... He's wearing this like old frontiersman outfit, and he has this long hair and this perfectly trimmed, groomed beard. It's just ridiculous.
And I think we talked about this the last time we did Chuck Norris's movies, and I wanted to see if it's like this all the time. And it really is. He just kind of mugs.
He just mugs.
It's like very winking at the audience, kind of like, just like, I'm badass.
Yeah, like he'll squint his eyes a little bit. And then that's just how, like, he doesn't even need to say anything.
Nothing.
He just squints his eyes and you know that you've done wrong.
Yeah. You made a bad choice in your life and I'm here to tell you you suck.
Yeah.
But I'm not even going to say it. I have no real one-liners. I have nothing to really say to you at all.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you by standing here and staring at you, you're going to get your ass beat.
And he does. It. He and beats their ass.
I think this is a problem with him. It's like, God, would it have been fun to make one-liners and some kind of quotes. I mean, it works better here than it did in the other movie we watched. The other movie, he plays an action star cop kind of character who definitely needs to make one-liners or say things, you know, you want to feel more of a human attitude in it. But if you only portray it as like, I'm a badass all the time, it doesn't make you a compelling character. Although here, since he is the protector and he is a spirit animal type of thing, I think it works better.
Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense. Like, I think that was a smart move to not have any like snarky one-liners because this is like serious content here. This is like saving the forest. And I feel like his mission in this movie is to be a spiritual guide and protector. And I don't think being a wise ass is like part of that persona.
Oh, that's what I'm saying though. I'm saying that here it works better because it needs to be dialed back because he is some kind of powerful deity type of spirit type of thing. He does. Why would you have to? In other movies, though, since that's why we're pretty much revisiting his career, because I want to see if he's always like that character he was when he was a cop badass. And I'm like, I see he's the same thing here. But again, I'm giving it a pass here because of what the character is. So it is stronger. It is more of a power. And that makes more sense here.
Right. But the squint is the same. Except I think
mugging,
everything
about it is the same.
He would maybe label it like the spiritual squint.
Yeah.
Or like the savage squint.
Yeah, do you think he's like thinking, well, here I would squint differently.
Yeah, see, how is my squinting? I think this is the spiritual.
How do you think a spirit would squint?
See, like when he plays a cop, he's doing like a savage squint.
Yeah. Would you mug like this? Well, what kind of face would I normally, if I'm a spiritual, like a god of some sort, am I just going to make this face or this face? I'm just going to go with this face.
Do I tilt my head to the right a little?
Chuck, I think that's the same face.
No, you see, it's not because
it's
my
steel.
Left eyebrow is coming down slightly lower than my right eyebrow.
Even the way he stands, it's just like, just kind of like
his tight ass jeans most of the time, up to his neck, with his fists like, you know, clenched by his sides.
I can't wait to keep watching more of these because I can see why like none of these movies are as like that's the thing we talked about when we saw the last movie. We had never seen any of these movies except Sidekicks.
Yeah.
because it was playing all the time on HBO and stuff, like on cable. It was always on, that damn thing. So I saw that movie. But he was playing himself in that film. So I'm wondering, when he plays other characters, is it always going to... Because I have never seen any of them.
Well,
and maybe
we did.
That's the reason...
We did see. And what was it? Action USA or that's, something?
That's the one we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
He was wearing jeans the whole time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is he always this... Like, is that why he wasn't successful as enough? Like, how did I never see it? I'm a person who watches a lot of films, and I never have really experienced Chuck Norris films before. I'm hoping for something more, you know, because it's not fun when your character's always that guy.
It's not, and I'm sorry. I'd still take issue with the fact that you're doing roundhouse kicks in those tight-ass jeans. Your balls will pop.
And the fun, I wouldn't say that they're not exactly roundhouse kicks. He just kind of like...
Swirlies.
I don't even think it's swirlies.
It's a swirl.
I think he just kicks up in the air.
No, he
like
spins.
He does like a sidekick.
He'll do like a half spin, a half swirl.
Is it?
It
okay,
is.
Okay, I guess so.
Yes.
Like a little bit of a jab, a little bit of step to the side.
I've been paying attention to this, okay? Yes.
It's mostly people bringing themselves at him and getting their ass kicked. He doesn't go over to them. He stands there and waits.
Yeah, he just stands
and
waits.
And then he steps
aside
and kicks them.
And then he gives them like an elbow to the throat.
So I guess that's what's happening. And here again, we're going to give it a pass because we get it.
Oh, we're going to, we'll give it a pass. Yeah.
So he kicks these guys' asses. And it goes on and on, you know, all the silly jokes, like the guy landing on his balls and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's very slapsticky humor. But it's his job to protect these children and the forest against Terry Kaiser.
And those guys, well, those guys run off. And he goes and talks to the little girl who is petting Rags, the bear. And he has an interaction with her. All the kids have seen him, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they can see him.
But only she talks to him. Well, later on, another one does, too. Although they act like they don't see him and he's not that big of a deal later on. Like, a lot of the kids actually don't even reference him that much. It's just that she talks about him a lot.
Yeah, this is a movie that he takes a back seat to, and he's supposed to be the draw. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. He's on the box cover. He's the forest warder in the headline here, the title of this movie. But she kind of talks to him and she says, I guess they have a bond, these two, because he saw that she was going to risk her life to protect the bear. And she asks him, where is the bear's mother? And because we were wondering, too, and they're like, well, there's always going to be a bigger bear somewhere else.
Yeah.
And he tells us that the bear passed away giving birth to the Rags bear, the little bear. And that's why the mother's not here anymore. And that he's going to be fine because he's watching over. But he can't go with her home like a pet because he has to be in the forest. But she is his friend. And now the whole idea is that he sees in her the goodness that he needs to see.
Right. She's bonded with the bear. Therefore, she's part of the forest.
So he disappears and everybody just acts like, eh. And she's just like, anybody see him? I just talked to him. Eh, never mind. No one cares.
No, just move on.
So they go fishing. And while they go fishing, the bad guy has gone back to tell his boss, hey, you know, these kids are in the forest. They're caused a hassle. They have a guy with them that beat the hell out of us. Like, and they're not even saying like supernatural kicked our asses.
Right.
I saw an eagle, like a hawk, and he turned into a man.
Right.
Nothing like that. Just like some dude just kicked our asses. So their next logical step is to take a bomb and blow up their treehouse, because that's the next logical step.
Oh man, this scene was like crazy, because it was kind of touching. It was the little girl was gutting the fish and, you know, getting it ready to cook.
Yeah, none of the kids wanted to help. By the way, they do have a knife, so she can scale the fish.
Oh, yeah. So she does everything.
So the kids all don't want to help her, so they all go out to get away. So they don't have to help her do that job.
Right. Now, how many days are these children supposed to be in these woods? Because she's, like, already Susie Homemaker. She's made the treehouse their home, and they have hammocks and places to sleep and places to cook and all sorts of things. I'm like, what is happening? You guys are 11.
She has a giant pet snake, a bear
with
her.
A pet snake, a little bear cub. I mean, it's just a whole thing. And so she's about to fillet up these fish, And there's a fucking bomb planted underneath the treehouse.
They think they're all at the fishing lake still or something.
Right. And so obviously Chuck Norris has bionic hearing and he can hear. How does he know that the bomb is there?
So
does he hear them talking about them leaving the bomb there?
No, they interact with him again in the woods and he grabs him and looks into his soul.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Now, here's the kicker here. Okay. These people are going to try and blow up children. How would they know that there's no kids in that treehouse?
Yeah.
They wouldn't.
That's what I'm saying. They knew the kids were in there in the first place. Why wouldn't you stay and watch? If you knew in the first place that those kids might be in there, why wouldn't you stay and watch the whole thing to make sure it went the way you wanted it to?
Right. But the fact that they're going to out and out murder children, I mean, it's crazy.
We did a disservice by not talking about the music in this movie, because that's a huge hilarity in this whole film. That might be one of the funniest aspects of it.
It's very pan flutey.
So actually it's a jungle from all those kids, like all those animated things. When you go in the jungle, they always have those drums that, like the, it's like on bamboo.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you hear that bamboo beat all the time, that jungle beat. And that's only when it's like, we're having fun in the jungle, the forest.
Yeah.
But jungle and forest are different.
Yeah.
Those are completely, you hear that in The Lion King. I kept laughing because it sounded like it was about to go into Hakuna Matata.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's not forest music. Like, you want maybe pan flute or some kind of Native American sound effect. Like, right. Sounds, like, you know, that make more sense to this movie.
Some sort of nature sound. They're doing
jungle sounds.
Yeah.
Like, and then when it's the bad guys, this is hilarious. It goes from two different bad guy musics. So the one bad guys, who are the guys working for Terry Kaiser, always have knockoff rock and roll.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious because there's a couple songs in this movie, and both of them are knockoffs of bands. So one, it sounds like it is David Lee Roth's, like, Van Halen song. I think I'm confused with the song In the Summertime from Mungo Jerry, which I believe Van Halen did a cover of, but I'm wrong. At least I can't find information that I am right. So strike that up to the Mandela effect. In the summertime, when the weather is hot, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Summertime or something like that. I can't remember what song it is in particular, but it sounds like a sped up, weirder version of that. Then there's another one that's like a montage of Chuck Berry or Little Richard songs that are just mashed up. It's so weird that I couldn't stop hearing the different songs in that one song. But then every time Terry Kaiser is shown, they have montages of like industry, and then they play the Looney Tunes. If you've ever watched Looney Tunes, anytime there was like a factory or something being made in a factory, they would have the same like sound or music to it. Dun, 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 dun. And it plays every single time they show it, like it's a joke, but it's a knockoff version of that knockoff joke.
The song in question is Raymond Scott's Powerhouse, and this is how it goes. And now here's the movie's version of it.
Right.
Which is so weird. Why wouldn't they just use that? I guess I don't know. I don't think it's copyrighted. But that everybody has that their own music, and they keep going back and forth between all three of these, and it's so jarring and so bizarre. But yeah, when the forest warriors or Jebediah sees them and has the fight again, and he sees into this guy's soul that the bomb is on the tree, he turns into a hawk and he flies across and then just goes, the hawk isn't fast enough, so I'm going to turn into a wolf, which is slower.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes into the wolf, and then he doesn't get there in time.
No.
But somehow is able to get the girl out.
Well,
she's right outside when it blows up.
She's right outside, yeah. I think that she got lucky because she was going to fry the fish, like outside by the campfire. And so he kind of pushes her away, but the treehouse blows up in like epic fashion, and she still gets knocked out. She's still taken out.
And we got to point out that her pet snake is never talked about again. That,
no.
It's obviously obliterated.
Yeah.
But the bear is also inside the treehouse.
Yeah.
And is shown kind of like moaning underneath rubble, like it's dead, like it's going to die.
Right.
And I would also say that the little girl dies here. I don't know exactly what's happening.
Okay, but she 100% dies.
I agree.
She 100% dies. And so what happens is, so then in the scene, we see Chuck Norris almost summoning every single animal nearby. And when I say every single animal, I'm talking about squirrels, skunks, titmice, hawks, wolves, like... You can see a shot of like every one of those animals, and they all put their spirits into her.
Okay, yes.
To like, I guess, bring her back.
On the side of the water again, where he was.
Yes, on the side of the water again. So she comes back to life.
Which I would assume this is the moment of him like saying, you're a part of the spirit warriors.
I feel like he has passed his power onto her because she's worthy of being this caretaker of the forest.
Yeah. I thought and that too. I was like, she died. She straight up died.
Yeah, she straight up died. So she is going to be the next forest warrior.
At least that's what we thought.
There's no other way to think about it,
but
I think.
She's not. She's fully alive and she can talk to everybody and she's fine. There's no powers.
She's still, there's no power.
And
she's alive.
He even says the bear is alive, but I don't know how. And that's why I kept thinking they're in some kind of spiritual realm.
Yeah.
But we're not told that. She wakes up. He says, you're going to be fine. Get some rest. And then she, before passing out, says, I'm sorry you never got to see your wife again.
Yeah, she
and
was harping on that.
And then she passes out. So you think, oh, she really is going to be, and this is going to be a movie about how she became part of the forest, and this is crazy. I cannot believe this just happened. But then the next scene, the kids, and by the way, the kids are better actors than everybody in the whole film,
I think.
Yes,
they are, 100%.
They freak out when they realize their friend is maybe blown up. So they have this freak out scene, and they decide to get on their bikes, race back into town, wisely, to get everybody to help look.
Mm-hmm.
So they get back into town. These kids do this great. They look like they're really in trouble. They're just like really freaking out. When they get there, her father just so happens to have pulled up at Roscoe's trading spot or whatever it is, and a convenience store. And he runs outside.
His name is Clovis. The actor's name is Roscoe.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, you're absolutely Roscoe. Clovis. They get the father and they jump into his pickup truck and they tell Clovis to call the cops and maybe fire to go out there because there might be a fire right now. Clovis comes out and he's just like totally just not fazed with the phone in his hand. While the kids are freaking out. The kids are really giving it their all. They race there, and then there is an emotional sequence of the father looking through the rubble for his dead daughter.
Now, this is Michael Beck, right? So,
yeah.
Okay, I gotta say, this guy is from the Warriors. We know him. This acting was atrocious. I mean, it was absolutely atrocious. He was trying so hard to muster a tear. I'm like, dude, this is not your first rodeo. This is not your first movie. You have to know how to cry. It was so painful to watch this actor struggle through this scene. We're supposed to believe that he's crying and screaming and all upset over his daughter might be dead in this rubble.
What did you just beat the hell out of me.
It wasn't any good. Nothing would be like that.
I don't feel it at all. It's almost comical.
You know, it didn't bother me as much as it bothered you. I think the problem here is that the way it was filmed with no music, it didn't seem like many cuts. If anything, it just like kind of lingered on him, waiting for him to like maybe get a better shot or anything. And it just let him go. And they didn't try to tone it down at all. And so he is just left there doing everything with all the sound. And it's just very like, they're not lowering the sound on him at all. They're not doing anything to make him sound a little more emotional. I don't know how to explain it, but it makes him come off like he is overdoing it.
You'll have to insert a clip, right? Because
of course.
I mean, this is like,
I don't hate it. I guess maybe it's because it gets me when a parent is looking for their kid and they're being like thinking their kid is dead. That gets me and everything. So it doesn't. It got me. It was like, oh,
it would get you if you feel it. But yeah, I'm not feeling anything coming off of him. It's almost a joke.
Like, I did. I felt it. I was like, oh, that's sad. And then I was like, I do know that the actor is overdoing it, but he's overdoing, trying really hard.
Good Lord, it was terrible. It was atrocious. God, I mean, my mouth was on the floor the whole time. I was like, this going on way too long, first of all.
The moment I knew he was overdoing it was when she suddenly shows up to comfort him, and he sees his daughter, and he makes, like, these weird crying happy sounds, like maybe a laugh cry.
Yeah.
And it sounds bad, and I was like, yeah.
I was like,
that's
okay,
when I knew
I'm
it
out.
Was like, okay, now it's overdoing it.
And I felt bad for this little actress too, because he grabs her and is like cradling her for like no less than 30 seconds, and the poor kid looks like she can't even breathe.
Well, I mean, at least it's believable. Like,
is it though?
I love you so much. I've never lost you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I love you.
I mean, he was bad.
Well, there was a whole thing, the setup with him being a terrible father and her taking care of him. And there's like a scene where the sheriff, we find out that he used to be the deputy, that he was the town deputy, but his wife has left them. And the sheriff gives him this really horrible speech where he basically is like, hey, yeah, if I scared my wife off, maybe I can cry with you into a bottle.
And I was just like, trying to give him tough love.
Tough love, but
here's
holy
the thing,
shit, man.
It made him realize what a shit person he was being when he thought he might have lost his daughter. So
yeah,
he had a revelation.
It kind of worked in that scene. I get what they were going for. By the way, the scene where the sheriff tells him that, there's this really funny, another scene where the director doesn't cut, or it's they let the actor do too much. So he like has a mug of like, I don't think it's coffee, but I think we're supposed to think it's coffee. But he put it up in the car while he was working on that was up on a lift. And then when the sheriff tells him, I can crawl back in the barrel at the bottle with you, he kind of stops and goes and gets his cup. And all I kept thinking, is he going to throw his coffee in his face?
No,
and
because
then he just
wasn't...
looks in the cup and he just like sips on it. And I was like, what happened here? Did the actor forget his lines? Is this a reference to that there's actually alcohol
there's
in that
alcohol
cup?
In it. That's what I'm thinking.
But it just was such a weird gap that I thought he's going to chuck it in his face.
I think maybe they wanted us to think that, which we did. But yeah, it was probably just alcohol.
It was awkward.
Like, just to let us know what a true turd he is of a father.
So when he cries and sees his daughter and holds her like that, I kind of go, okay, they did their job. I get what's going on. Yeah. I feel this is the guy realizing what a piece of shit he's been and how she's more important than the wife who took off, which we don't ever find out why or how or nothing about
off.
It. I'm hoping the forest warrior took her out. Maybe she was like an asshole doing crack in the forest or something.
Oh my God.
Who knows? But they're back and now they're kind of trying to piece it together. What happened? The kids are telling them like the forest warrior protected us. And we find out, now this is really funny. The sheriff says, I don't believe in ghosts, but there's been weird things happening in the forest for a very long time. In fact, I have a story. And now he tells a story, which I think is a murder that the forest warrior accidentally botched for this guy. Because I think that this whole thing is so bizarre. The sheriff took his wife out on a nice moonlit, canoe ride middle of the lake, in the middle of the night, in the moonlight.
Just to have just the moonlight, and it's pitch black out there. And they topple over.
He says, it got so cold and I wanted to give her a jacket. And then we toppled over and I couldn't find her in the water. So instead of keep looking, I just swam to shore and I went and got help.
Yeah, just give her some time to drown.
That's why I was like, oh, the forest warrior actually stopped this murder.
I mean,
he goes, when I got back, she was sitting on the side of the lake waiting for me cold. She said a man grabbed her out.
So he saved her life. The forest warrior saved her life. Her husband abandoned her and let her drown.
And he goes, she just sat there and waited for me to come back.
Oh my God. I was like, okay, I don't understand why we get this story. Why?
To say the reasoning? That the forest warrior has been helping people out there for a long time.
How ridiculous.
But still, I was like, what the hell was this story? Like, what? I really want to see the guys from Terrifier. You know how they've been making all these weird movies that are like knockoffs of other films and these companies that have been doing that recently? They need to make the horror version of The Forest Warrior. I want to see that.
Yeah, film. The one that just goes around killing people. Yeah,
transforms into animals an animality from Mortal Kombat or something.
Get with your Mortal Kombat.
So here we have another story of those odd happenings. And that's when another deputy runs in and tells them that there is so much evidence pointing at Terry Kaiser as being the villain.
Uh-huh.
And that they saw someone in town with explosives.
Right.
I was like, somebody
that works for him and his, lumber yard or his lumber business or whatever. And he saw them with explosives. So it was like, oh, automatically, boom. Oh, all see what I did there? See what I did there? I didn't do that on purpose. But yeah, so all signs point to Terry Kaiser. So they have a warrant for his arrest. But he's in the forest with all his goons and his workers.
Well, they have a plan to get revenge. We're going to go out there. We're going to level the forest now. Right. I have the thing signed. They were supposed to go to vote, but he's just like, I'm doing it.
Yeah, he said, fuck their vote. I'm going to tear down the whole forest.
And they have walkie-talkies. They have a whole thing, but kids hear it. And they're like, we have to stop it on our own. So they go out there to foil them Home Alone style.
Yeah, they set up nails and a board to stop their cars and
potatoes in their tailpipes.
Potatoes in their tailpipes.
I will say, once again, this is where Terry Kaiser shines.
It is.
When he is being beat up like a Looney Tunes character.
Yes.
And also when he is agitated, the actor, I don't know what it is about physical comedy and this guy, every time he has a line of dialogue, it makes me laugh.
Yeah.
So this entire thing is where Terry Kaiser gets to shine again, because the kids are just home aloning the hell out of the situation so much that the one kid hacks their mics by holding down. He stole one of their walkie talkies. So he put rock and roll music up to the walkie talkie so everybody hears it. But, and they also stop them so they can't get to the site of the cutting. And they also can't call the people to cut the trees. So all the people waiting to cut the trees start dancing. I made a joke because I saw feet dancing and I was like, oh my God, it would be so funny if all the guy, the cutting crew, they were the ones dancing. And then it was the little kid. And I was like, oh, that would have been real. And then I said that. And the next shot, all of the guys started dancing.
All the lumberjacks are using the chainsaws as kind of air guitars and dancing everywhere.
It is
and
insane.
I was like, oh boy, this is amazing. So the best scene ever, though, can we please talk about this?
There's so many scenes in this shot.
The best scene ever is when they booby trap the hell out of this area, the kids, because they don't want the forest to be torn down by Terry Kaiser and his group. So Terry Kaiser, they get the nails in the tire, and their plan is foiled for a second. So Terry Kaiser gets out of the car. Now he stands in a pristine spot where the kids have rigged a rope. So he gets out of the car, stands in the rope circle, and they throw a huge, huge log down a hill. And the log is attached to the rope, okay? The rope is attached to this huge log. It takes Terry Kaiser down the freaking mountain, pulling him at ludicrous speed, okay? There's no way he survived this at all because it's attached to his ankle. So he's being dragged like a hot mess. And the fucking log goes off the side of the cliff into the rapids.
Yes.
And Terry Kaiser goes with it. Yeah. And we were literally, you and I looked at each other and we're like, he's fucking dead.
Well, he goes down that mountain for a while. He even holds onto a tree. And I'm like, he's ripped in half.
Fucked up.
I'm like, this is a murder. We just watched an actual, these kids murdered this guy.
This is a kids movie?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
And you said, well, I know the next shot is just going to be him dry and fine with everybody else.
Yeah, just a little beat
up. As hell. He's not only fine and with everybody else, he's with his crew exactly where he got ripped out of.
Yeah, exactly the same spot where he was torn from by the log down the hill. He's right there. And they just, he had poison oak.
Yeah, so now the actor is like completely messed up looking while also scratching from poison oak.
I mean, I don't know about you, but falling like, I don't know, 500 feet off a cliff into icy water. I don't know if that would like kill a man.
But Terry Kaiser does it so well.
He's
so funny. I just love this guy. I don't know what it is about him, but we have to point out that the crew actually finally get the signal to cut the logs. Now, I will say that the reason that happens is because the one guy finds the kid dancing out in the forest and turns off the microphone with the walkie and calls everybody. So this gives the forest warden finally shows up to kick this guy's ass.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. He beats him up to the point where he actually lets the little kid punt do the last kick in the face.
Yeah, it was nice.
And that was nice. But what's really funny, and we have to talk about this, is they cut the tree and the forest warrior grabs the chainsaw and stops it with his fingers.
Well, yeah, he's a spirit. He can do whatever he wants.
And he just does the staring at the guy.
The squinty eyes.
And then these guys see a guy holding a chainsaw blade and not having it work. And they decide, well, we can attack him.
Yeah, see, that's,
I would be like,
just normal behavior.
No.
Like, I would run for my life because obviously there's something wrong with this guy, or he's superhuman or whatever.
This is a ginger Jason Voorhees. I would leave. Instantly leave.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He kicks the shit out of everybody.
Yep.
It's sure all the guys who are dancing. He kicks their asses. So, then the funniest part is the cops start showing up, and the kids hold hands in the street to stop the cars. Terry Kaiser's car from getting past. And so he pulls a gun out on them, but the cops show up exactly at that moment. So the kids run off, and it makes Terry Kaiser say, holy shit. The lawyers tell him, get the gun out of the way. So him and the truck driver guy start fighting over the gun. He literally shoots the gun by accident at the cops.
Yeah. What's amazing about these two characters are so random. These two lawyers, because there's really no reasoning for them to be in the movie.
The actor, I'm shocked the actor's in this movie for no reason.
He doesn't even need lawyers because he's completely disobeying the law anyway.
Yes.
So he's just going to tear down the forest on his own, which is illegal. So the cops are after him. He shoots the cop car, and the two lawyers run away. It was comical. One guy had a toupee on. It was flopping off.
Yeah. It's so odd. I do think these characters are all kind of fun, and they're doing little things, but it's not enough. But it's still at least cheeky, stupid humor.
Yeah.
That is fun for kids, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. This movie has a message.
Yeah. Terry Kaiser gets off by himself, and he almost escapes, except the Forest Warrior finds him. Mm-hmm. And we find out that his tragic backstory is that he's an arsonist. Mm-hmm. That he almost once burned down the entire forest, and the Forest Warrior stopped it.
Yes.
And he knows all this information about him. Yeah. And so...
he's bad news.
He goes to try to kill the Forest Warrior. But again, Jebediah, whatever his name is, he turns into a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Bear, I don't know how, but the bear smacks him and Terry Kaiser goes rolling in front of the cops.
Yeah. That was amazing. They get him. Yeah. So they stop the whole forest, you know, destruction.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And Terry Kaiser's great because he's like, you know what? I love the forest. I love everybody. I even love police. I love everybody. I don't care. I can't wait to go to jail. I love bears. I love everybody.
Terry Kaiser was probably the best thing. And he wasn't even in it enough.
No. And he didn't get anything to do until this last half.
Like, yeah.
Just look what I found in the tailpipe. A potato.
A potato?
Yeah. I got two of them.
One potato. Two potatoes.
You want one?
Well, I want one. He wants to know if I want a potato. You want some? No, Buster.
You want a Richard? You're a little green weenie. I've been penetrated.
It's Mr. Thorne, it's not his fault.
No, he works for you, Mr. Thorne. Hurting him won't do you
any good. I don't want to hurt him, all right? I don't want to hurt him. I just want to strangle him. It'll make me feel better. All right?
None of these people do. They're, like I was saying, all these character actors, no one gets anything.
Nope.
It's all great. Everything works out because now the father is going to give up alcohol and become the sheriff, the deputy again. He's going to join the police force again, although there's only like 20 people in town.
Yeah, there's no police force.
There's no real police force.
A little hut where the two police officers go.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
They all get together and they rebuild with, I guess, some of the lumber from the guy who has left his lumber yard.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sitting there because the guy's going to jail now. I guess they can use some of that wood to rebuild the treehouse because they all get together, the entire town shows up, and they rebuild it, and the little girl walks off to the side and sees the Forest Warrior right up on the hill smiling at her, and then he signals for somebody, and his wife walks up. And then they look at her, and they wave goodbye. And she's so excited. He did find his wife again.
Yep.
Finn.
It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. And what's impressive to me is that they literally made the treehouse look exactly the same way it did before it blew up. So I was like, oh, that's pretty impressive. You know, they had the blueprints for all that, you know? Yeah. But I will say that I did not hate this movie.
Well, I didn't hate it. The 3.4 is very shocking.
That's rough.
It's rough, especially from 3,000 reviewers.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, this movie did feel like an after-school special.
Yes.
It felt like it was, you know, doing the whole message thing.
Yeah.
It was just to prove a point, you know, and it's a kind of like a beautiful story about, you know, there's a forest warrior who's protecting everything. It's kind of sweet.
It's sweet. Is it silly? Yes, it knows it is.
Yeah, it knows it is. It's just like, you know, and Chuck Norris is there to, you know, I guess be the person that is the draw, but he's just not in it enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kid's movie, so he shows up to do what he needs to do.
Yeah, because kids think he's badass, you know? He can kick and punch and...
stretch and kick! I'm 50!
You know, he's a tough guy, and kids dig that, you know? It's a draw, it is.
I like that he allows the kids to be badasses.
Yes. For
like
sure.
In their own ways. He doesn't help them when they're doing all this stuff to stop the cars.
Right.
They come up with inventive ways on their own.
Yeah, they home alone the shit out of that by themselves.
And he never intervenes. And then he lets when the little kid is going to get hurt by the big guy, he takes that guy down a size and then lets the kid finish that off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, knock his ass out. You deserve this. And the little kid does it. And it's like a great moment. It's like, okay, he's not interfering. He's not stopping it. I liked it. I don't have any problem with this movie. I can
Some
see
of it was corny.
It's corny.
Corny.
But exactly what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like a cheesy after school movie or like a little movie for, you know, kids to go home and like cheer for or whatever. I don't have any problem with it.
No, I don't either.
Is the whole white guy is the savior of Native American lands? Yes, it's stupid. It's a little too self-indulgent to put yourself in that character as the deity. But what action star hasn't made themselves that character?
True. Pretty much
like
everyone.
Everybody has. So I can't really knock him for it. But I don't hate this movie.
I don't either.
I think it's a little too underrated. I think that's I think it's a little harsh.
So you get it a 5?
I think I'm gonna give this a 5. It's mediocre. I'm not gonna remember it.
No, it's
Bunny
Stearns,
but I didn't hate my time with it. We watch so many bad movies. This by far is not that bad.
No, I mean the only thing I truly disliked was the whole acting scene from Michael Beck. I mean, Jesus, that was just atrocious.
Wasn't doing any good. Nothing would be like
it. When I saw the concept of this, and I saw that he was a guy who stops a chainsaw and turns into animals, I thought he was going to be an actual person with superpowers.
Yeah.
And he's not. He's just kind of like a spirit. So I was like, okay. It's not as corny as I thought it was going to be. I thought he was really a superhero.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, man.
I
kind of
like the whole spirit thing. I think that's it was kind of nice. I mean, the message came across just fine. You know, it came across nice. So, all right, 5 and 5, right?
I think so. I mean, maybe 5 is a little high, but
no,
I'm going
mediocre.
With 5.
It's mediocre film. It's not, I did not hate it, you know? So, that brings us to our segment of why we can't have nice things. Where I will read out 2 extremes of online reviews, a 1 10-star and a 1 1-star review, as proof that people cannot review movies, and they ruin it for the rest of us. So, I'm going to read the 1-star first. I decided to end on a high note. So, I'm going to read the 1-star, and it's, "This movie is torture to watch."
Wow.
What were they thinking? I repeat, what were they thinking? Coming up with a movie as bad as this. I just can't imagine it's possible to make this and be satisfied with it when it's finished. So what happened? Did they think that as long as Chuck Norris was in it, everything would be okay? If so, they were totally wrong. Norris has starred in lots of bad movies over the years, but this is the lowest of the low. A horrid mixture of family, comedy, action, and adventure with really lame fighting scenes. A script that probably was found in the trash and very unfunny moments puts this movie at a really low ranking spot in movie history. That is, to say that harsh is like an understatement.
Yeah. And it's like, even if some of those points are right, like, oh, it's a very cheesy, easy, simple plot screenwriting wise. Like it's a cheap, like get done. Yeah. It's not acting like it's some high-class thing. It's not acting like it's an Academy Award movie. It's not going out of its way to say, hey, look how amazing this is. It's just trying to be a simple, fun movie.
Yeah.
It's like a simple kids movie. I have no problem with it. But to say that, to go that low with it and say that harsh, I think
that person
has to know it's not that bad. And I always say that, like, you've seen worse.
Well,
I know
apparently
you've
this
worse.
Person has not, because he's putting this as a movie that's really low in the ranking in movie history. I mean, come on, dude, you have not seen anything. Come on. So, whatever.
Yeah.
But
so weird.
The 10 out of 10 is Blast from the Past. It's a shame that most of the reviews here just don't get it. This is a movie for kids who envy characters like Chuck. This is a great movie that you would want for your kid to watch and learn. It tells the story of how important nature is and that we should stand up for it, especially if someone like Chuck is its keeper. It might be a little naive from a technical point of view. It's low budget, semi-amateur movie, but nevertheless, it looks great. One of those unforgettable titles from our childhoods, Sunday after breakfast and your TV is on. Different type of movie from Chuck, but in his Chun Kuk Do code of honor and rules to live by.
Yes, yeah. I like that review. What I like about that is that's exactly what we're talking about. That's the kind of person it was made for, and that person gets it. Like, it was made for that. You wake up and you're watching something
I agree. Like, I remember when I used to wake up on a Sunday morning and watch all that crazy sci-fi and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people who look at like a Godzilla film and not recognize it as being this silly, fun movie. It was never supposed to be the high art, you know, and some people seem to give it more of a pass.
Yeah.
To me, this is the same kind of thing. Is it as like, no, it's got no budget. They didn't have any budget and it still doesn't look awful.
No, it like, doesn't look awful.
I was never like, oh my God, it's terrible. We were laughing at it a lot. Like, you know, because it's so simple. But that person also is doing the thing that we're always talking about is where they know a lot of people are giving it one. So they're going to be like, you know, you guys are going a little too harsh. I'll go the opposite. Where it's that two spectrums thing. That person's trying to push the rating back up.
Right. It's not a 10-star movie. Yeah. So I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to help it along. But
I get it. But the person also does get what it is about. Like, yeah. And I will say, we didn't talk about it, but it could be that the low reviews also are mad about it having a message about deforestation and all right. kind of stuff. Like, you know, and some people get offended by that. Like, it's like, oh, how dare you put your Greenpeace. Like, even the character says some weird stuff. What do they call it?
They call them the...
Green Weenies?
The Green Weenies.
And I was like... Okay, yeah, it does see, it's simplification, like, without a doubt. And I know how some people can get, like, offended by that kind of message. And, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Who cares? It's not a horrible message at the end of the day.
This movie did not have, it actually had an uplifting message. It was kind of sweet, you know, and... I didn't see anything wrong with it. I mean, aside from Michael Beck's acting, but that's it.
You know what would have been nicer, though? It would have been nicer if the Forest Warrior kind of changed them. The bad guys.
Yeah, like kind of like made them see the light. But, you know, this is... The thing is like, if it's not going to be that group of people that's going to try and do this, it's going to be some other group, you know?
True.
It's always going to be somebody that tries to destroy the beautiful nature and you know...
Yeah,
trees that sustain life, and there's always going to be those people. I mean, but it's just, you know, you can't fix people. You just, you know, yes, you can try, but you can't fix people.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been it kind of, especially since they set up that he had lived there before. I thought they might, because there was a moment where he started like having like I think he was like reminiscing about his past and how he had good times at that treehouse. That treehouse has been there forever.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that treehouse was originally his house. It could have been. And then Terry Kaiser's like, I remember when I was a kid and I played at that treehouse.
Yeah, it could have been
I thought maybe it was the Forest Warriors.
Yeah, the Forest Warrior.
So I was like, oh, Terry Kaiser was there. And I thought when he was reminiscing, he could tell that there was better times. But then he went right back into the evil.
Yeah.
But I was like, or what this movie thinks evil is like. And I thought, oh, they're going to go back to this. They're going to make him remember that, you know, the forest is power. Like, there is something about it, and that he does remember things about it that are meaningful and spiritual. And mm-hmm. I thought they were going to do that, but instead they just went, nah, he's just a straight-up murderer, and he actually likes burning things. And I was like, ah, that was kind of lazy.
Yeah.
But still. It doesn't matter at the end of the day, but they could have went for something a little better, stronger.
I mean, yeah, he's a villain at the end of the day, and he deserves his comeuppance, and he gets it.
Yeah.
So it works out.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all I got.
Didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it.
Our first one out, I thought this was going to be the worst. So maybe it might get worse from here, or accidentally.
It's going to get worse, yeah, because when I first saw the opening scene of this, I was like, what has he gotten me into?
Yeah.
But now I think it's going to get worse because I did not hate this movie. So we're starting on a high note. There's only one way to go.
Yeah. All right. I can't wait to find out. Let's see. Do you have any parting thoughts?
No. That's it. It's all I got.
All right, then. So thanks for listening, everybody. And I would love to hear your opinions. I don't know why I always say thanks for listening and then go into a rant and then say thanks for listening again.
Well,
I gotta stop doing that.
We appreciate everybody who listens.
I wanted to say, if you like this movie, you hate this movie, I'd love to hear about it, and I'd love to hear any opinions or movie choices that we should do on the show. Give us a chance. A movie that you think people hate, but they shouldn't. I'd love to hear about it, and we'd love to do it. Also, we'd love themes. anybody has a theme for the month, I would love to hear that too. So hit us up on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night, or Joe at The Crafty Misfit on Instagram. And we would love to hear anything you have to say about any of it. Even if you hate us, I'd love to hear it.
Oh, don't hate me. I get sad.
Well, don't hate Joe, because who could hate Joe?
I get sad.
Me, I don't care. I love to hear that. Nobody until hates next you. Time, thanks for listening.
They're talking about the mountain that it could mean a job. It could mean everything for us. I should stay.
They can decide without us. Come on, Daddy, let's go home. We need some sleep.
Yeah, I am pretty tired.
Daddy will walk.
It's just walking. Oh, Dad, come on.
God in heaven. What I give.